This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Are you ready, Joe?
I'm born ready, mate.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Green and White brought to you by Argyle Life, live on Twitter or X or whatever. Argyle welcomed Watford to a wet and windy West Country, and both clubs whipped up their finest performance all year, taking it in turns to blow each other away with a downpour of goals in a whirlwind affair. Those turning their freshly unwrapped official club calendars may have been shocked to see Stephen Schumacher grace the first page, but it was Finazaz who stole the headlines with his show-stopping effort shortly after AFCON-bound, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, Edu Kayembe's opener. Morgan Whittaker and Ryan Hardy added to their already impressive returns, and while it seemed like another last-gasp winner was in the offering, it was Ryan Edwards' goal, chipping 11-foot-nothing Connor Hazard inside the six-yard box, that meant the points were shared. As always with our lives, if there's anything you want to add or want to request to speak, let us know and we'll try and get you on. I'm sure there's a few in here that will like to get their point across, but obviously joining me to pick apart the chaos initially is Joe, Ben and Nick. Joe, as you're unmuted and you're ready to go, do you want to give us your match run through?
Where did you start? It was obviously conditions weren't conducive to a what seemed to be a particularly exciting game of football. However, I think conditions more than played their part. In quite possibly one of the best games I've seen for a number of years. I say seen, I should disclaim I wasn't actually unable to get to the game. I had settled for Argyle TV's excellent coverage of it. But, I mean, what an advert for the Championship. You know, two really good teams going forward, flooded forward with pace, with energy. Ability helps. Both teams full of abundance of that, and I mean, all pretense of defending was out the window, wasn't it? You know, every time either team crossed the halfway line, they looked competitive, looked like they'd score. I mean, I think I put in the group chat, Aaron, didn't I? 2-2, I wouldn't have been surprised if that game had finished 6-5. Either way, and I think that's fair. What I will say is, removing my green-tinted glasses for a little bit, although I do feel like over the 90 minutes we possibly edged it, certainly with the quality of chances we had, it sort of would have felt like a little injustice to the neutral had either team snatched a late winner just because of how entertaining the game was. I mean, there were a couple of standout performances across the pitch. I thought in an Argyle shirt, I thought Adam Randall was outstanding. The front three were brilliant. You know, I mean, all of them could have had a brace or hat trick of goals. And, you know, I think we've got to give a special mention to, as you say, Kayembe for Watford, who ran the show for them, but also Ben Hamer, who pulled off two or three unbelievable saves. I mean, the couple at the end there, the one where he tips, is it Whittaker's shot that he tips over the bar? He makes a couple low down to the far post at free kicks and set pieces. I mean, he kept them in it. But let's be fair, you know, Watford at times rode their luck. Hardy hit the post. They had to throw themselves in front of efforts at the end. But we equally rode our luck. It was just one of those crazy, crazy afternoons that I would say, for most other clubs, doesn't seem to happen every week. However, at Home Park right now, it is happening every week. And look, if we're going to stay up with these entertaining games, you know, we can maybe use the summer to solidify ourselves a little bit more. But what great entertainment for the 16,500 that were in the stadium.
Yeah, go on, Ben. Ben's joined us. Why don't you follow that up, Ben?
Yeah, it was a ridiculous game, purely because I think the quality of the goals was, even if some of, you know, our defence and their defence was suspect, the quality of the finishing was excellent. And the fact that both teams looked like scoring whenever they went forward at times, and both defences looked like they'd never played together at times, made for a really entertaining game. And it could have finished anything. I think the pick of the goals, everyone would agree, was Finn Azaz's goal. I don't want to get, like, you know, I'm sure you've got a little segment for that, so I'm not going to eulogise about it too much now. But the fact that he's had to sort of punch it rather than cushion it, rather than just sort of guide it because of the conditions. If you just meet that with a sweeping foot, it's like you just skid off your foot. So he's had to sort of punch it, which is such, you know, so difficult to get the direction and the power, the weight of that right dropping out of the sky. It's just absolutely ridiculous technique. And, you know, it's another performance from him that's put him on the map, the radar of the general public. You know, people who sort of pay attention to the broader championship will have been looking at Azaz, and he's sort of come up in, you know, different podcasts and reviews and things of the season so far, if you follow the league. But, you know, even just guys who are following, guys and girls following their own team, have sort of seeing the highlights of Finn Azaz and asking their respective boards to inquire. So that's something of concern now that we're in the transfer window, and hopefully there's details in the contract, in the loan contract that was signed in the summer, which will be to Argyle's benefit. But yeah, just a ridiculous game. You know, the back three, you know, to be very reductive, is designed to provide you with more presence at the back at the expense of a man in the midfield, with your wing back sort of supplementing the midfield at times. And that just didn't seem to work. It hasn't seemed to work. We seem to push high, press high at times, and yet there seems to be a real reticence to push and press in the midfield. I thought for the first and second goals that Argyle conceded.
To be fair, Ben, it's very difficult to push and pressure in the midfield when you essentially play without one, like we did at times yesterday.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, the idea of having the back three is to prevent when the wing backs invert and or overlap, you cover the spaces that if you had a four and it was full backs going forward, that you leave him behind. And yet somehow there seemed to be that, like you suggested, Joe, there seemed to be like a disconnect between the what was happening at the top of the pitch, what was happening at the back. And I can understand that it's a different formation that is being, you know, although it's been looked at and probably tweaked during the season. We certainly have used it at times in game. You know, four games in the space of, what was it, 10, 11 days, no manager. Juzenip's also off doing a lot of admin for the transfers, for the obviously most importantly for the managerial appointment, recruitment search. So, you know, it might well be that it's difficult to sort of really hone that. But at the same time, you know, that you can go into the nitty gritty, but it's quite obvious there's issues there. I thought that, you know, on first viewing, I thought that Houghton was a little bit slow in both of those. He didn't go to the man in the box. It looked like it was his man. He was free to put the first goal in. And it looked like he sort of, I wasn't sure if he'd passed on the man and not let Plegwazelo know, or if Plegwazelo then sort of like decided to, as he sometimes do, make a rash decision and sort of decided to leap out of his position to make an interception and then left the gap for the ball to be played into. But I thought Houghton wasn't particularly brilliant. And then, like in the post-match, Jusnip said that he was still feeling the effects of his illness, and then that kind of explains it. It makes sense, you know. If you're not 100%, it's difficult to, you know, keep up with in this league with guys who are at 100%. So I could, you know, it's one of those things again where we say we sometimes make mistakes and we get punished for it. The third goal, I feel it was very reminiscent of, was it the first Millwall goal where Hazard just didn't sort of decide what he was going to do. He sort of half came, didn't come, and was caught in no man's land. And he actually had a better game yesterday, I thought, than he has for a few games after, you know, defending him when he was in, you know, towards the end of his run before Cooper came back. I thought he was doing quite well. It's his form and sort of confidence since he's come back in has been quite worrisome to me anyway. But that was probably his best game since he's been back in, but still a few nerves and a slow, pensive and build up at times. So it seems like he improved a little bit, but yeah, I think he could have done a little bit better with a third goal. And it's a shame because goalkeepers' errors get highlighted, you know, or punished. You know, if a striker misses a clear shot, it's not necessarily as glaring or as obviously punished as when a goalkeeper sort of makes a mistake. So I thought he was a little bit unfortunate to have that one punished, but it certainly wasn't a flawless game, I don't think, from anyone in the back sort of back six positions. I thought Randall was absolutely fantastic. I thought that Randall was my man of the match, despite, you know, obviously you need the guys to put the ball in the net. And yeah, Randall's capable of that. But, you know, we're talking about Finn Azaz and Morgan Whittaker being those star men. Randall was everywhere. He was breaking things up, and more than anything, he was making the right decision at the right time, time and time again. And I thought he was brilliant. And when, you know, I thought him and when I thought Kundal needs to come on for Houghton here, because those two will make an absolutely fantastic double pivot. And thankfully, that was the sub that was made, and it did have an effect. But, you know, there were other subs being made by the opposition, etc. But that was really promising. And I think that if the new manager comes in and does decide to use a double pivot, I think that Randall and Houghton, and also Kundal potentially, now that he's sort of grown a bit physically into the league and the demands of the league, there's three options there that would work really well. But whether the back three or the back four is going to be the way forward, it doesn't really matter. There's just some massive problems there that are evident in both systems, and that's probably going to have to be the main consideration in the transfer window, you'd think, from a, you know, from a layman's perspective.
Football's a game of opinions, and I accept that. I struggle personally to criticise, or I'd find it difficult to criticise Hazard for the third goal. I accept that obviously on Friday night against Southampton, there was the one where, you know, he could have perhaps been a little bit lighter on his feet when Che Adams, isn't it, is played through. But I think this one, like, there was such a degree of quality about all six goals in this game. Like, the ball over the top for Adams, whether or not it was intended for Adams or not, or Andrews, sorry, not Adams, whether or not it was intended for Andrews is irrelevant. It was just such a high-quality ball that was played through to him. I'm not sure really we could have expected. I know people will say, well, he's a goalkeeper, his frame, he could do this, he could do that. I just think it's a little bit tricky to criticize him for it, just because of the quality of the ball. And the finish from Andrews is such a deft little touch there to flick it round him. I'd personally just appreciate the quality of the ball and the finish rather than saying that Hazard could have done better personally.
It was a wonderful finish, but he comes and then stops. You either got to keep coming and make the challenge. You either go up for the ball, and if you clatter the man, you clatter the man, or you backpedal, or you just decide to stay and then rush him once he's got the ball down. But by staying where he was, he put himself in no man's land. That's the problem with that. I can understand why he's coming and thought, oh no, that's a better ball than I thought it was going to be. But then he has to have the quickness of thought to either backpedal or think, well, I've committed now, I've got to come and challenge for it. Because by doing what he did, which was freezing, I think he's given, you know, Andrews the option to do what he did. He had it, which is a hard thing to do, but you know, that's easier than sort of going up to trying to take it out of the air against 7'6" Connor Hazard. You know, if it's just sort of, well, I'm gonna back my decision. It's that indecision, I think, that it's the same with that Millwall goal, you know, both of the central defenders when he sort of came and then stopped, and the two central defenders looked at him as if to say, well, we'll either come or don't. You know, we can't interfere if we're leaving him to you. I think it was a little bit of that from, was it Gibson? Yesterday, I think it was a kind of like, well, do I clear him out here? Do I challenge for this? Or are you going to come and take him? And it just sort of puts indecision in the mind of the defence. I don't think it's necessarily a clear and obvious error. It's the bigger picture of his decision making there.
Yeah, okay. I've been pretty preoccupied today, so I'm gonna we'll move on to the questions that I have prepared in a bit. Before we do that, I'll give Nick a chance to speak over you both. What did you make of? I was going to say Saturday, but it isn't. Is it Monday?
Yeah, I mean, there's not pretty much else I can sum it up, really. I mean, I think Ben and Joe have covered all the points that I would have spoke about, and I couldn't agree more with both of them, to be honest. I think, like I said, there are two brilliant teams in attack, and it just seemed that both teams struggled with the defensive side of the game on Saturday. Whether that's purely down to the conditions, because let's have it, the conditions were pretty terrible and pretty shocking. Whether that's played a massive part in the defensive side of the game, I don't know. But it just seemed that neither team could defend. And like you say, six quality goals. I think the Watford second, I think the Devonport end zone, the Watford second, I was right behind. And as soon as it left his foot, you could tell it was in. It was just one of those strikes. It was bending away from the keeper right to the top corner. There was nothing Hazard could do. And to be honest, I don't think Hazard was at fault for, you could criticise Hazard for any of the goals on Saturday. Some people around were questioning it, but I can't see it, to be honest. I think he's done his best he can. He's been probably let down by his defenders on the first one. There's just nobody's moved. It seemed to be too static. And like you say, the third one was just it's a wonderful finish. Possibly, like Ben says, he could have come, if he's come and stopped, possibly come and take the lot. If not, you know, it's one of those, really. But yeah, it's thoroughly an entertaining game, and there's never a boring match at Home Park at the moment.
No, obviously, back-to-back 3-3 draws. I'm sure we'll get on to that in a minute. Obviously, as always, we did the full-time thoughts tweet, and I'm going to speak for a few people that are listening live. Paul Burke said, crazy game. It was the first one I noticed that we don't have a manager. It seemed obvious that we didn't have enough numbers in midfield every time they went forward, but we didn't change shape at all. Instead, it had four like-for-like subs. Great going forward. Hardy being back is massive. Lewin Reed, again, listening. A point is probably a fair result, but their keeper had a worldy second half. Could have, should have got a winner in the last 10. That would have been more fitting of a Home Park this season. Tom Harris, fantastic game. Looks so fluid going forward in the first half. I think playing so many games in a short space of time with our smallest squad came into effect towards the end. I'm sure we'll get on to transfer window shenanigans in a bit. Once again, sloppy defending has let us down. Can't be scoring three at home and only taking a point. Who else? Memories of Argos says we look so dangerous going forward, but Watford had so much space and another goal conceding to a deep run that wasn't tracked. Frustrating, very entertaining. But if we could defend, we would be laughing. And then last one, let's pick out Carl Gatfield says, attacking wise, we're incredible. Defensively, diabolical. I suppose that could be for either us or Watford, to be honest. Screaming for experience and championship defenders and a midfielder that can break up play and retain the ball in close pockets of space. Next manager has a right job on his hands. I'm sure we'll get on to that. And then, okay, final one. Ryan says delicious. Not wrong. Obviously, nine goals scored in Nanskerville and Dewsnip's interim reign, which looks likely to be over in the coming days. We'll get onto the manager in a bit, but obviously Finn Azaz with a pick of those nine. Who should go to here? Joe, go on. Just how outrageous is that technique? As a man, I've seen you do that time and time again on private side, but just how outrageous is the technique on that finish?
Well, I mean, we can all do it. There's nothing to... No, look, all joking aside, it's the sort of thing that if a Haaland or a Salah or one of those big names in the Premier League did, you'd be seeing it every minute of every day on Sky Sports News. It's just the level of ability, the level of control that you need to have to execute that skill is off the charts. And the way he keeps it down, he paces it brilliantly. Hamer had no chance. I mean, that just screams of a player who is full of confidence at the moment. And I mean, it's just an unbelievable goal. I was on my feet immediately in the shop where I work watching the game, because I couldn't believe it. Can we class that as scoring from a corner? You know, I'm not sure we can claim it as part of the routine because I know Watford won the first contact, but it's just an unbelievable goal that, you know, I hope at some point gets some form of recognition, whether it's even just goal of the month or, you know, whether it makes the shortlist for goal of the season, because the sheer level of difficulty involved in executing that is high. And it set us on our way, you know, and that goal was coming. There was a... Obviously, you know, the start of the game was a little bit cagey, and then Watford got their goal, which was well worked from the throw-in, although I do think we could have perhaps been a little bit tighter to the man, to Kiambi running in. But the fight, 3 or 4 minutes before the goal, we were starting to really grow into the game, and we'd cut out a couple of half chances. And, you know, obviously Hardy had already hit the post by then, and... you know, that really set us on our way. And as I've testified so many times on the podcast, Aaron, in the last 18 months, that when we get one goal at Home Park, the winds change, the sails are up. And, you know, as Ipswich found Sheffield Wednesday, etc., Derby last season, and even Exeter, you know, you can't stop it. When our goal are in full flow, particularly at Home Park, it's a very difficult thing to stop when we get going forward. And by gods, didn't we play some lovely stuff going forward yesterday?
Yeah, on that, Ben, Joe obviously mentions the goal of the season competition. How highly is that strike ranking?
It's got to be up there. It's a different, you know, the thing about football is there's all kinds of different goals. That's the beauty of the game. You can score in all kinds of different ways and everybody has a favourite. You know, I think we all have one that starts bending miles outside the post and hits the top corner or the bottom corner. We all love.
My favourite is one Matt that Butcher's it. At Cardiff.
Okay, fair enough. I was going to say a crossbar pinger. We all love a crossbar pinger. We all love, you know, all of us have different, you know, some people can't stand headed goals. Other people love a banging header. So I think, you know, goals of the season are always subjective. But, and I think as well, it depends whether you just consider the quality of the strike or if you're also considering the moment in the game and the jeopardy in the game, etc., and the emotion of the situation or not. But I mean, in terms of just skill and ability, that's probably the hardest technique. You know, it won't show up in XG numbers like, you know, Whittaker's did from miles out on the right against Sunderland. But in terms of if you were actually trying to achieve that, dropping out of the sky in the rain, sort of like how many times you're going to get that in real world difficulty, that's probably the highest quality goal that we've scored this season. And that's high praise indeed, because we haven't really scored other, you know, maybe one duff goal all season, really. So, yeah, you know, we are spoilt. You get your money's worth at our goal. And it's funny that Argyle and Watford are the two teams that are outperforming their XG the highest in the entire league. So, you know, they don't do anything but score screamers, apparently. So it seemed that the script was written before kickoff. But, you know, we're still leaning on that. I said after the Ipswich game, you know, we can't sustain this level of accuracy, you know, hitting the amount we're hitting the target, the amount of chances we're converting, and the quality of the finishing we're producing, and yet we still are. It's only dropped off very, very slightly. I did the maths earlier today. We're still the second highest shots on. We're still putting the second most highest percentage of our shots on target in the league. We're just 0.1% behind Borough, even though our overall total has dropped down.
I remember you saying that that just wouldn't continue, and it is.
Yeah, and yet, you know, clearly it is. I mean, it is regressing slightly, but the lads in the front, and bearing in mind this has also included a period where Hardy's been out and Bundu. You know, Bundu has been underrated. His shot accuracy is like 80-odd%. It's ridiculous.
With opinions like that on statistics, about saying that thing, Argyle with high statistics not being able to sustain it over a course of a season. Ben, you could get yourself on, you know, like famous national wide podcasts with views like that.
He's already on a famous national wide podcast.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. I do apologise.
I don't want to get any bigger than this, Joe. You know. The bright lights of green and white are more than enough for me. Is it sustainable for the rest of the season? Well, if they've done it for over half a season, potentially, you know, despite whatever laws of regression, you know, the law of averages suggests, it might just be that those players are that good. And if they stay fit, they'll carry on. I think, you know, you might come onto it, Aaron. I'm sorry if I steal ahead, but the fact that, you know, the impact Hardy's had has really demonstrated what we've been missing. You know, the intelligent runs, the opening of space, the decoys, the ability just to occupy the eye of defenders, so that players like Morgan Whittaker or Finn Azaz can drop the shoulder and cut inside because they're making the little run and occupying the minds of the defender, standing them still and making them make a decision, has been, you know, has been really valuable and evident. Not to mention the fact that he's, you know, scored 2-2. So the fact that they've been able to keep that up or just have a very small regression during the period that, you know, we've been missing our first and second choice striker has been really impressive. And, you know, maybe they just are that good, you know, and that this isn't, you know, it's high levels for this league. But if you think they might be Premier League players, you know, and or Premier League quality players, then they should be performing at that level consistently. So the question is, are they, or is it just they're in really hot form and being their talents are being maximised in this system and in the relationships that they've built together? So, you know, we hope it's the former, and that they, you know, they keep going all season. But we still have the problem that we had back then, which is the front end is top class and the back end just doesn't seem to be working. And, you know, the idea of having three at the back, you know, our biggest problem seems to be we can't stop balls being through balls into the box, whether they're from angles or through the middle. And you know, even though we had three central defenders and sort of Houghton and occasionally also Randall back there, just there always seem to be pockets of space. And that, whether that's a personnel thing or a systemic thing, because it's been happening in a variety of different formations now over the course of the season, I'm not sure. And defending isn't the nuances of defending isn't my forte, so I'm not going to have a strong opinion on the matter. But I think it's probably a combination of both, and hopefully that's something that will be quizzed of the new of the candidates that are coming in. That hopefully that will be a big part of the selection process.
Yeah, you talk about Premier League quality attacking players, and I'm sure we'll get onto the other in your nose later on in the managerial chat. But obviously, Morgan Whittaker adds another £500,000 onto his value with his 13th league goal of the season. Nick, just how much of a bargain are Luton Town getting for this rumoured £4 million move? What a player.
It's superb, isn't he? I mean, he's got that ability in a game where he can be quiet for 20 minutes or so and then just appear from nowhere with, you know, a wonder strike or just a little bit of trickery and he's in setting somebody else up. So if 4 million is what they're getting, if they're only paying 4 million for him, then they're getting themselves a bargain, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about Whittaker any more than we already have, and it's just running out of superlatives, aren't we, Joe? Like, just a phenomenal player. Like, he's got to be worth, in today's market, he's got to be worth a good 20-odd mil, surely. Like,
no, I'm not sure he is. You know, he's got a lot to learn. He needs to develop somewhere for at least another 18 months, 2 years. You know, I don't think we need to slap any price tags on him. Let's just, you know, let him play football. You know, he still makes mistakes. He still, you know, he still needs to learn. You know, I don't see why anyone would want to take the risk on him for another couple of years, to be honest. You know, just let him grow as a player down here. But if you want a serious answer, then, yeah, we're going to get a significant return on our investment, aren't we? You know, I mean, you sort of look at... see, I'm not going to try and... Well, I am going to try and do it, but I don't want this to blow up into a big thing. But think back all those years to how Brighton started their level of success in the transfer window when Tony Bloom first went in there and took over the club. You know, they started by making these small little, you know, finding these little gems and selling them for big profit, and that helped sustain their push through the divisions. And, you know, I do have it in the back of my mind that perhaps maybe the sale of Whittaker, hopefully in 18 months' time, 2 years, whatever it is, I think I'm probably blinkered to the fact that it may well be sooner than that, not this month, but, you know, there's every chance that teams will be coming in January. Not January, the summer, crikey. How many have I had? But, you know, you'd like to think that that first sale, as it were, with Whittaker, I mean, we all assume that it might have been Cooper or even Randall, you know, but Whittaker is going to make us some serious money, isn't he? He's not a commodity, you know. He is a person, and he comes across as a really down to earth chap. And you know, him and Rachel, his partner, have made it clear on a number of occasions how much they love Plymouth and how much they're happy here. So hopefully that will play a big part when these other clubs come sniffing. But you know, what an unbelievably gifted player, and we'll appreciate him even more when he's gone, probably. I know we appreciate him a lot now, but in such a short space of time, he's had such an impact on Plymouth Argyle Football Club that, you know, he may only end up playing 100 or so games for the club, but, you know, I mean, he'll be remembered as if he's played 3-4 times that, because his contributions in our recent history are quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I noticed that that Dane's requested to speak. There was something I was going to add, and then I completely forgot. I got distracted. Dane, why don't you jump in, actually, and just... wait, how do I do that? Add you as a speaker, see what you got to say. If anybody else wants to add their thoughts and feelings, either add a message on the space or jump in. Obviously, you can now speak, Dane, if you want, mate. Unmute yourself.
Hi, guys.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. Hiya.
Just some thoughts on obviously the game yesterday, or in general, really. I mean, it is really exciting at the moment with all the goals. I counted like 17 goals in the last 8 games, I think it was, something like that, or something crazy. I think it was 14 goals, but they've let in 17 in the last 8, which to me, that is just not sustainable, because my big concern is, these lads up front, if it does dry up, we're in big trouble. So they really need to sort out what's going on at the back. Reduce it. You're not going to turn around and say we're not letting a goal in again, obviously, but you've got to try and get some clean sheets here and there. And you've got, and I just think the way they do that, the new manager, they have to be more aggressive. When I watch Argyle, they always seem to be a little bit of a soft touch. You know, the other team seemed to ride through 2 or 3 tackles. And yesterday they sat off Watford. The one of, I think it was the equaliser where they bent it into the far corner. They tip-tapped it around and we didn't really engage. We sat back and they were able to take, he was able to pick his spot. And I just think if Argyle were a little bit more aggressive, we had the centre midfield sat in next to the centre halves, and they need to be a little bit more aggressive and come out a little bit. After that second goal, I saw Juzenip crying and waving them up the pitch a bit. And that was 100% right. We were saying it for about 5-10 minutes. They're too deep. They're sat back and they need to be more aggressive in these challenges and off the ball. And it concerns me. The amount of goals does concern me because, you know, I think a lot of the teams below Argyle are going to spend in January. And they may improve. and they may spend more than we do. That doesn't mean to say their recruitment will be better than ours, of course. But
Dane, just jumping in, who below Argyle do you think are going to spend money? Just out of curiosity.
Are Birmingham still below us?
Birmingham are a point below us. Yeah, I mean they need to sort themselves out. It's a basket case that they are at the moment.
Yeah, well, but maybe like I don't know.
I'm just looking below us. I mean, Rotherham aren't going to be able to break the bank. I'm not sure QPR are in a potentially
Huddersfield position. Huddersfield has just been linked with bringing in a Chelsea youngster, etc. So I think you might see some clever business in the loan markets from some of those clubs.
We certainly know that Sheffield Wednesday are a basket case, and he's not going to give Danny Roll a war chest to go to war with. God knows what Schumacher's going to have available.
But
to
you get the gist of what I'm saying. I get concerned with the amount of goals, because at the minute, it's exciting. It's brilliant. The attacking play is like nothing we've ever seen at Argyle. You know, it's unbelievable. But the amount of goals is crazy that we're letting in, and they're soft goals as well. It's not like we're getting ripped apart by unbelievable play from the opposition. They're goals that we could do something about all the time. You know, like, I mean, I heard you mention Hazard. I'm not a fan of Hazard. I'll nail my colours to the mast on that one. I've tweeted about it before. I think he's quite a poor keeper, actually. And I can't believe a guy 6'4", whatever he is, got lobbed in his 6-yard box yesterday. You know, and I personally think he should have been rushing out to that, or at least making himself big enough to not allow that to happen. I'm not a goalkeeper, but I was a defender, and I've managed teams that were, you know, and I've had to organise defences, and I know, I just think I'd like to see them being a little bit more aggressive, a little bit further up the pitch at the minute. And I think that would resolve a lot of their problems, because I did see a stat that they're the fifth highest goal scorers in the league, and the four above them are the top four in the division. So it's a simple theory, really. If we can tighten up at the back, we all of a sudden become quite a good team. And that, to me, is the new manager's biggest job. And I think it's not an unfixable problem. But the new manager has got a really good team there. He's just got that problem to deal with.
Dane, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, like I say, I was in the ground, I was speaking to guys around us, and we were saying that we don't have that mean, nasty streak in us. I don't think there's a player that we have that will put themselves about and, you know, wind a player up, but, you know, getting a player's head. I mean, Ipswich have got that Sam Morsy, for example, we were talking about, and he does exactly that. He's a bit of a nasty player who gets stuck in, you know, chuck a challenge, a little niggly challenge that's like maybe a little bit dirty, but not enough to get a booking, if you know what I mean. That sort of player, we don't really have that in our team. And I think we could do with that, because I think...
But it's not even like we need that. Like, of course, it would be nice, but if you think back to the game yesterday, I think it was Miller. Miller put in a nice big challenge with about 5 minutes to go to win the ball back in the middle of the pitch. And that was the first big tackle of the game. Yeah. You know, and all I'm at, as a defender, you've got to have some aggression to you. The amount of times I sit there and say, look how soft we are, because other teams just roll over our tackles. They ride through two challenges, and it's, you know, just get tight and be aggressive. It's a contact sport still, you know. You know, we can still be aggressive in our challenges and in our play. You know, we don't... I'm not necessarily calling for, like, a killer in the midfield, you know, like an old-style Roy Keane or Vieira or anything, because, you know, those days are gone, or a Morsy, or even, like you've just mentioned. I'm just saying the players that we've got, be a little bit more on the front foot, be a bit more aggressive, get tighter to your men, be aggressive in stopping the crosses. You know, and all those basic things, all those basic points of defending could just do with a bit of brushing up. And I think that would resolve a lot of their problems in regards to goals against.
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of, as a team, not just even the defensive four or five or six, if you want to talk about being in a back five and having a defensive midfielder. But like the amount of times when you know screaming get out to the ball, whether it's the ball's gone wide or you know it's a 1-2 through the middle of the park, That you know the kind of and Juzinip said it in his post match presser that as a team, not just the defenders, but as a team, we need to get a bit smarter and a bit more aware with our defending all over the pitch. You know, and there's that lack of kind of you know that immediacy, that urgency to go and press a ball, to go and you know to go and challenge, to go and jockey and make things make life difficult for you know. There's been a couple of games where you know we have managed it, whether that's you know by fluke or by design, where we've not given you know the opportunity, the opponents might have had shots and had opportunities, but every time they were under pressure, you know it wasn't just free. But if you look at the you know the sort of chances, you know even the third goal, he's got a defender in attendance and the goalkeeper in front of him, but is he actually under pressure? Not you know really, other than
no, he's been able to lift his head and plonk it into the box.
Exactly, you know that's the difference. It's okay them being there, but are they actually putting weight on you? Are they putting you under, other than psychologically, is there any pressure there? And I think that does need to, then like you say, I think there needs to be a bit of nastiness. I think you know the team has been drilled as we're a footballing team, we play a certain way, but it, like you say, it is a contact sport, and I think there does need to be a little bit of a psychological maybe it's a belief that you know they can go out and do that. I don't know,
but also that last point, because I'm going to get off and watch the end of the darts, right? But last point, when Miller done that tackle in that last 5 minutes, it not only lifts the players around him, but the whole place goes up. You know, the whole place goes up. Everyone loves a big booming challenge and a bit of aggression, and it raises the temperature in the stadium, and it has an effect on everyone around you, because as soon as he does it, then someone else will go in and do it, and someone else will go in and do it. And it just needs a little bit more of that at the minute. And that will honestly, that will really solve a lot of their issues in regards to the conceding of the goals. But also, I do have to say, at the minute, the ball retention is appalling. You know, the ball retention, everything's 100 miles per hour. There's no real control, you know, and I know it's great. But sometimes when you attack, the Whittaker goal where he hit it with his right foot, that was a lovely bit of controlled football from Finnazars across to Whittaker in, you know, lovely bit of controlled football. But when it's so frantic, there are periods in the game where they have to keep the ball. You know, there's a time and a place to be frantic and a million miles per hour catching teams on the break. Brilliant. But sometimes there has to be some control. And what you may find is when the new manager comes in, and he will obviously want to tighten it up at the back, you may have to give something up at the other end, you know. So that's just something that everybody should really prepare for.
Yeah, I think also a lot of that depends on who we get in as well, and how much they want to.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Sort of, maybe not handicap, but change the way we go about things. And if that... readdresses the balance of that attacking.
It's the tweak.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of things. Obviously, the crazy pilgrim listening in says we do seem to respect teams way too much. In his opinion, he agrees. And Christopher Vowles says, I'm not convinced that we're regularly letting in soft goals, but we do need someone in midfield to put their foot on the ball when in possession. Yeah, I think unless anyone's got anything specific to add on that game, I mean, I've got a question about the presser, Ben, to come to you. You seem to be getting involved in that. So, go on, Joe.
Before we are we is this where we're finishing talking about the carnage of the three all?
I mean, we've done 43 minutes on it. If there's anything else you want to add.
Yeah, I do want to jump in, and this might surprise a few people. I want to do a little Raf Watch segment, Aaron.
Oh, yes. Forgot about that. Sorry. Go on.
I thought that was by far the best refereeing performance I've seen all season. I thought in really, really tricky conditions where any other referee could have been whistle happy, blowing up and booking players for all sorts. I thought Bobby Madley showed a level of maturity, and you could clearly see why all those years ago before he went to Norway, that he was regarded as one of the best referees in the country and getting regular big games. I thought he controlled it brilliantly. He was taking no nonsense, particularly at the end from Watford players when there was a bit of aggro at some of the free kicks that he was giving. I thought it was comfortably the best game. The only point you could possibly say is that whether or not there was a penalty at the end against Dan's scar on Healy, but I think he's probably just about got it right. I think Healy goes down a little bit softly. I can see, obviously, Scar's got his arm wrapped round him and it's on his shoulder, but the handball in the first half is not handball where Livermore puts it out. It clearly hits his shoulder joint. And the second handball at the end, when Azazfard went in, that's also off the chest of the Watford player. So I thought, in short, that Bobby Madley probably put in comfortably the best refereeing performance I've seen all season. And there you go. Praise for a referee. Who'd have thought it?
Finn has joined us as a speaker. Is there anything you wanted to add on Watford, Finn?
Just a couple of things. I first of all agree with Ben and Dane's points on especially getting out to players on the edge of the box. We need to be far smarter with that. I think we're electric going forward. But in particular, and I agree with, when we counterattack well, there's nobody in the league that can stop us, to be honest with you. I mean, we opened up Leicester quite a few times. We probably should have scored one or two goals in that game. So I think we're some of the league's best at that. But I do think, our ball retention, like as Dane mentioned, is atrocious. So at points, brace yourself, everyone. But I'm going to criticise Morgan Wakeham here. If there's one thing he needs to get better at in his game, it's being more smart with the ball, particularly when he's got it in deeper areas. Because we all know he can like switch the ball, at, like 50, 60 yards and terrific pass to open up a team. But there's points where you just don't need to do that. And quite often he will fire it at somebody when he can just play a simple rolled 10-yard pass and get out of trouble a bit more. I don't want to put that negative on a really good performance, but I just do want to highlight that those are areas that are quite fixable. And I hope that the new manager, whoever the new manager is, he comes in and can do something about that.
Okay, well, that's rare, negative on Morgan Whitaker. I agree.
I've got to be honest. There were several things I was expecting to come of this space tonight. I wasn't expecting anyone to come on it, so it was Morgan Whitaker.
No, it's not specifically him. I just think like
it was specifically him because you did. Morgan Whitaker.
So we're all sat here saying, "Oh, he might be going for 4 million. He might be going for 6 million." You know, I'm also saying, you know, he's still a young player. He's still got things to improve on. He's not the finished article, and I think we need to be aware of that too.
Yeah, let's move this along then. Ben, you know I'm going to come to you, obviously, post-game. Neil Dushnip quipped in his presser comparing footballing styles to a, and I quote, previous manager. I think your best place to answer this is your mentions have been infiltrated by Stoke fans. Firstly, can you give us a little recap of the presser? And then secondly, does this provide proof that the rumours of a falling out between Neil and Stephen are indeed true? I know that you've got a few things to say on the matter.
Genuinely wasn't expecting you to bring it up. I love a bit of needle and a bit of banter. I, you know, as you were aware, I thought the Stansfield shirt was quite funny. I know that, you know, it is inciting trouble, you know, to sort of do it that close to the fans and whatnot. But I kind of like that part of the game. I think the game is very sterile these days. And yeah, Juicenip's little quip was that someone asked him about the, you know, how exciting the game was, I believe. And he sort of said, you know, it's 3-3. And there's a former manager who suggests that my style, my methodology is quite boring, which is quite ironic given that his team sort of has just drawn 0-0, which is a reference to Stoke's very good, you know, result, it must be said. I don't think he was making any comment on
by all accounts, they were unlucky it was 0-0.
Yeah, you know, so I don't think he was making any comment, passing any judgment on the quality of Stoke's performance. But I think he was, it was clear that he was implying that Schumacher wasn't as enamoured with his advice and his methodology as he perhaps had been at the beginning of his tenure when Juicenip was mentoring him. And it was just a passing dig. You know, he's done it to other people in the past. Joe, you found it, I think, quite humorous when he sort of had a little mention about Ryan Lowe's form, or the form of his team, and in the
fans forum when he mentioned forum, about yeah. how what was it? It was the amount of goals that Preston were conceding,
exactly,
or something,
yeah.
wasn't it? When somebody asked him, should we tighten up at the back, and he said, well, there is a team who's in and around the top six who have conceded 10 more goals than us, or something at that point.
But yeah, so. That's exactly right. And I don't think he's being like, you know, negative or bitter. I think he's just got that kind of dry sense of humor, that wicked sense of humor. I don't think he was necessarily digging Shuey out. And, you know, and as to was there a falling out, I don't think it really matters. You know, because you can fall out with people. How many times have you know, you can work at, you know, anywhere. If you ever got a sort of part-time job at McDonald's or you know, any kind of those sort of like student jobs, you don't get on with your managers all the time. Well, you might fall out with people. It doesn't mean you then quit the job. You just learn to have a working relationship. So even if there was a disagreement, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, Shuey wanted out, because relationships are broken down irreparably. And, you know, in working relationships, is anything ever 100% one person's fault or another's? Not normally. There's normally probably a bit, you know, there's two sides to every story, as it says. It doesn't really matter. I don't think, you know, we should be either too concerned about protecting anyone's sort of reputation or damaging it. You know, he made a joke. He obviously has some legs to it. And, you know, we can speculate if we want to. That's not really my... you know, my bag. I just thought it was a funny little dig, a funny little swipe, very much in his sort of wheelhouse in terms of his sense of humour. And I think that some people have taken, you know, sort of clutching pearls and wringing hands unnecessarily. It wasn't a personal attack. You know, it wasn't beyond the pale. It wasn't a personal attack. It was just a, you know, a reference to something that perhaps has been discussed. He's a savvy guy. He knows it's been discussed on social media, etc., etc. So, you know, he's just having a bit of a joke. There's a twinkle in his eye. It's not something that I think needs to be taken seriously, and doesn't really affect any sort of upcoming appointments, or I don't think really had necessarily that big an impact on the passing of the last manager. Go on, Jack.
I think if you're taking what Juicenip said seriously, then you probably need to get some fresh air. I think what's clear from it was that is Neil Juicenip's sense of humour all over, as Ben says. We've seen it at the fans forum. We've seen it in a number of his interviews before. I think that is just Neil Juicenip's sense of humour. And look, it got a laugh in the room. It got chuckles from everyone on Argo TV. And that is solely how it was intended, was that it was just, you know, you've got to remember that Juicenip's known Schumacher for 30 odd years, if not more. You know, he's known him since he was a wee lad taught him at school as well, didn't he, at one point, I think? So, you know, he's known him a long time. They've clearly got a good relationship. You know, all these rumours about fallings out and things, no one will ever know. I don't necessarily believe that anything like that's happened. I just believe that Schumacher's taken what he perceives to be a better opportunity. And, you know, if there has been any tension between the two, that's between the two of them. It's not for us as supporters to get involved or to add fuel to the fire if there was.
I agree, Joe. And I mean,
it's a bloody funny quip that he's made in the media, and you know, Ben's put it out there on social media, and it seems to have caught a few nibbles in Staffordshire. But you know, I just think overall that's just Neil Jusnip's sense of humour, and I, you know, as somebody who's got a dry sense of humour myself, I'm all for it personally.
Yeah, absolutely. And people will say, you know, oh yeah, but he's in his role representing the club when he says that. But you know, people are people beyond their position in the football club. You know,
we all moan when people come out and follow scripts and things.
Yeah, exactly.
Let people have jokes in the media if they want to. I'm sure Stephen didn't take offence to it, for Christ's sake. He probably sent him a text message with a load of laughing emojis afterwards. So
yeah, exactly. You know, it's sort of like there's too much fake. You know, people will laugh at some horrendous things, or, you know, when sort of befits them, or find certain things funny, which really are beyond the pale, and yet will be quick to find problems with something. Like Joe says, someone wants to have a laugh. You know, at no one's real expense. He's not, you know, he's not criticised or made a. He's just sort of saying, you know, oh, I don't play, you know, football too badly, do I? It's an innocent joke, which I just thought was funny because, like Joe says, you know, I'm dry humoured too. I thought, you know, great to see a bit of a character in a presser, and you know, obviously, yeah, I was aware it might get a few nibbles, but you know, I don't think there's anything that some people seem to be intent on making mountains out of molehills unnecessarily.
I completely agree with what both Joe and Ben have said. Like I said, having been to some of the fans forums, and actually having been to some of the other club events that the club put on at the end of season awards, for example, last year, Neil has that very, very dry sense of humour where he'll crack a joke in anything. And I think it does boil back to that Liverpudlian sense of humour, I think. And he's got that running through him as well. And I can almost guarantee there was no malice in that whatsoever. It was tongue-in-cheek, just a bit of, you know, a bit of banter, if anything, between his coaching style and what Schumacher's had to say about his coaching style in the past. There's blatantly been something said in training, probably in jest, nothing serious. And that's where that comment's come from. It's a nothing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously, January the 1st rolls round and the transfer window has sprung open, a window spring, I suppose so they do. Before we get the, before we hear about all the in-the-nose tweeting away, firstly, let's discuss the rumoured outgoing with Macaulay Gillespie has moved to Charlton Athletic, looking likely after he was spotted at the Valley. I'll come back to you, Nick, on this one. Thoughts on the move?
Initial thoughts would be I'd be surprised if we're letting a defender go to Charlton and sit there and watch a team play, considering that the window's not open yet and we've not made any signings at the back when clearly we're lacking at the back. Obviously, for example, at the start in the summer window, obviously we were trying to get a striker in, and I think it's clear to everyone that for some reason or other deals had fallen through and we were, you know, looking around the last minute for a striker. So we know that can possibly happen. So for me at the moment, I can't see any traction in it until we've got bodies in the door, because why on earth would we send bodies out, or, you know, send bodies out the door before getting bodies in when we're lacking in that area? But plus also you're going to have a new manager come in who might look at Macker and go, you know what, I like this kid, let's give him a chance. So unless...
There is the flip side to that, Nick, that we might, you know, every pound helps in the transfer market, and it may be the case that to get one in, we might have to get one out.
Of course it does, but my understanding at the moment, though, Joe, is we're probably lacking. We probably need two in before we can send one out. I get...
Well, certainly if we're going to play three at the back, we're probably a wee bit short, of a centre-half, because you've got to remember, I don't think I'm missing anybody out when I say that if Macca is to go to Charlton, we've got Gibbo, Scar, Pleggy and Brendan, yep. Haven't we?
No, we haven't, right.
We've got four defenders to play in three positions if we're going to play three at the back. And, you know, I hate to bring it up every time we talk about Brendan on the pod.
I was just about to say the same thing.
His injury record is there for all to see. And,
agreed.
But I would suggest that perhaps... I mean, I've always thought that, you know, the transfer window, although it opens on January 1st, it, I mean, we saw last year, five signings in the first 6 days of the month. So those didn't happen immediately. Those had obviously been working in the background. I wouldn't be too surprised if Maka is going out, that somebody's coming in almost immediately.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment. That's a fair comment. But I'd be surprised if we see traction on Maka before we have somebody in the building ourselves.
That's probably a good shout, given the way the striker situation worked out with presumptions at the end of the last window. It's probably a good shout that we might be, either something might be in the works as far along as Maka's deal to Charlton is for us. But yeah, I think that given that last window, I think the club would be silly, and probably you assume that the club is excellent at learning its lessons the way it operates. It wouldn't put itself in that position again to be shorthanded in a crucial position.
One thing you will say, if Maka is going, I think it's pretty clear to everyone what our memory is always going to be of him, and that is that one moment of quality that gave us 41 minutes of sheer hysteria in London, isn't it? Surely. I know he scored that header against Bolton that was quite valuable that season.
100%.
doesn't quite compare, though, does it?
It probably doesn't compare as to taking the lead against the European champions.
Funny you mention that, mate. I actually, on the way up on the train, on the tube, on the way in, a couple of my mates, I think actually one's listening to this now, we looked at the odds for defenders to score the first goal, and the only defender I didn't put on was Maka. And it was something stupid. The odds were something ridiculous as well. It was like, I think it was like 1,000 to 1 or something like that for one of our defenders to score first, or something ridiculous like that. And Maka was the only one I didn't put on. So yeah, I will always remember that.
At this point, as with the live stream post Shuey's departure, it is sort of my career experience, it is sort of the point now where I go, you know, if you are listening, please do gamble responsibly.
Yeah, there's a reason there's a match-worn Macaulay Gillespie shirt in the house that I share with a Chelsea fan. less said about that. I see that AVFC Faithful are in here. They've missed the gushing outpouring of love of Finnazaz. They'll go back and listen to that when this goes live on all major podcast platforms. Obviously, we've already touched on needing some defenders in the window, Joe. Obviously, which positions do we need strengthened, and are there anyone realistic that you've seen tipped that you'd like to see come in?
Manager, first team coach, goalkeeping coach.
Yeah, we'll get on to that. or does that affect the transfers in? Anyway, because obviously I think we are looking more at a head coach, aren't we? So
it seems that way. Juznip constantly referred to head coach in his post-match press conference yesterday, which is an interesting take, given that I'm pretty sure Ryan and Shuey were both managers, and Derek finished as what, head of football or whatever it was he was. So there is that, and it will play a big part. Of course it will. You know, the new manager will have his own ideas on things. Although we're going to stick to our identity, he'll want to tweak it as best he can to suit his philosophy as well. For example, he might have a totally different idea of what sort of striker we need to what we all believe we need. But overall, I think the shopping list has to be, even if Maka isn't going out the door, we probably do need another centre-half, just because two of the five we've got do have a checkered injury past. And obviously, you know, there's the every likelihood of suspensions and things in the second half of the season. We definitely need another striker, even if Ben Wayne isn't going to go out on loan, if that's a possibility this month. We do need competition up there. And I suppose, you know, I mean, we're going to get Saxon Early back at some point. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Nobody seems to know what the timescale is on that. I'd imagine it's probably too soon to expect him to get some minutes on Saturday. I mean, that would be the perfect game to get him game time if he is going to be anywhere near ready in time. He's going to be like a new signing. We're pretty much covered then on both sides of that line of the defence. You could probably argue for maybe a combative midfielder. The likelihood is that Lewis Warrington will go back to Everton. We've touched on that so many times on the pod. You know, it's just a shame it's never worked for him for whatever reason. You know, and people have to remember that there's a whole variety of reasons why these sorts of deals might not work out for each individual person. It's not a slight on Warrington as a player, because we saw in a couple of glimpses, in particular the Leyton Orient Cup game, and even to a point the Crystal Palace Cup game, you know, he was excellent. The Leyton Orient one was the one that stood out for me. So there is definitely a player there, but for whatever reason, it's not worked out for him, and he's now got this injury. So we're definitely going to need another midfielder in that space. And of course, what we do have to remember is we do have at least one loan facility available to us. So you would imagine there's almost definitely going to be somebody coming in on loan. But I mean, time will tell. I don't think we're going to be rushing into any business, mainly because we don't have a head coach at the moment. That will obviously play its big part, as I said. So unlike last January, I think we're just going to have to sit a bit tight, let the dust settle after this week. You know, we have obviously got a blank week before the big game against Huddersfield next weekend. So let the dust settle on this week, and then I think everyone's minds will be fully focused towards the back end of this week, start of next week.
Yeah, I think that Kuznip said the ideal is to get the manager in this week and then go through the recruitment with them in place. But I imagine that he also said that getting the right appointment is necessary. They're not just going to appoint someone for the sake of it. So it might be that the recruitment goes on without them. I personally think getting a sort of dominant, a big dominant, you know, someone like a Sonny Bradley, you know, somebody who, you know, can sit in the middle of a three, or, you know, to the right of Gibson, who will set the tone. You know, we talked earlier about having a nasty edge, someone putting in that first tackle to get the emotions going and to get the
Daniel Ayala.
Get the teeth bared. Well, it's funny. Someone mentioned back along when I said to I was joking with some Villa fans on Twitter, because they seem to be our sort of fairy godmother at the minute, and we got the AVFC faithful in here. And I thought, so you don't happen to have a centre back down the back of the sofa, do you? And someone said, you know, as a matter of fact, Courtney Hawes seems to have dropped off the face of the planet at the minute. So if we could get Finn tied down on a permanent, you know, he's probably on 40, 50 grand a week, Courtney Hawes. But that's exactly the sort of person we need, a ball playing, but solid big man who can play in the style of this team. And yeah, he's on 40, 50 grand. But if he's not doing anything at the minute, I'm sure if we can sort of throw 8 to 10 grand a week at him, it saves 10 grand out of a week out of Villa's pocket. That's the sort of person who could completely change the tone of the team. As one, but yeah, we do need competition in the midfield. We do need competition up top. But if there's one sort of position that we could do with someone coming in who could completely change the tone and the tenor of the way we play, a big unit with you know, someone like Bradley who'll sort of stick his fingers in the ears of the silky midfielders, you know, give the wet willies out to the Emre Chans of the league. That's the sort of player we need who could completely transform the mood and the style of the team, I think.
I do hope Uncle Simon's not listening and genuinely taking Ben's advice that we should go out and try and sign a 50 grand a week earning centre half.
Oh no, I mean, like, if we can get him on loan and sort of, you know, and offer the eight to ten grand off the top was my suggestion.
If Uncle Simon is listening, I think Ben's offering to subsidise a level of Courtney Hawes's wages. I think that's what we're trying to get at.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give everything that I have surplus each month. How's that? That'll be my contribution.
It reminds me of Gavin and Stacey. A pound a week, Gwen.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it would be.
Well, talking of 50 grand a week centre-backs that could potentially be on their way to Plymouth Argyle, there's a list of names doing the rounds, a little shortlist on Twitter. But Chris Errington has popped up at the back post with a last-minute equaliser to put the whole process in doubts. At @Miller_element tweeted, Scott Parker, Dick Schroeder, John Eustace, John Terry, Dean Holden, Richie Wellens, Nathan Jones and Paul Heckingbottom are along the lines of interviews. We're going to take that with a huge pinch of salt. Any of those there, Joe, that would take your fancy? And on the 50 grand a week centre backs, is John Terry coming in as a player manager?
You reeling off those names sounds like the start of a really bad dad joke. John Eustace, Scott Parker, Dick Schroeder, and John Terry all walked into a bar. I think,
and Simon Hallett said no.
Yeah, Simon said you're barred. Look, the big point is, and I've said this to a couple of people today, there's probably you could probably count on one hand how many people know who's on the shortlist. This is something that is going to be kept under wraps as much as they possibly can, and quite right too, because you know Birmingham are looking, Swansea are looking. There's every likelihood a couple of other Championship clubs are perhaps getting a little bit twitchy with how their seasons are going and may well be looking at who's available to change their fortunes. And the one thing you don't want to do is names to creep out who are potentially appealing to other clubs, and then you start a whole snowball effect. So quite rightly, everything's under wraps. As you said, there have been shortlists banded around and names linked left, right and centre. You know, but as I say, there's probably only five or six people who truly know who's on that short list. And as I said earlier today, you've got to trust the process, trust the board. They've got it right the last twice, this regime with Ryan Lowe and Stephen Schumacher. They've brought in, you know, they've appointed two promotion winning managers and one of them won a title as well. So I trust them immensely to get this decision right. As Neil Jusnip said, whether it takes 12 hours, 12 days, 12 weeks, however long it takes, him and Nance are ready to lead the troops into their next battle. And so far on what they've done for us so far, I don't think anyone will be too disappointed in that, because the way I think it's important that we do touch on this, the way that those who have come in, Nance, Jusnip and Rhys Wilmot, have helped lift the group, galvanise them and get them to get the level of performance they have out of them. You know, we could very easily be sat here with three wins and a draw, or even four wins, let's be fair, from those four games. You know, there's every argument that we should certainly be at least unbeaten from those four games. So I think those three chaps in particular deserve immense credit for the job they've done. If they're going to be in charge for Saturday against Sutton, so be it. I think they'll have us perfectly motivated for the game. It's obviously a tricky one going up against a team in a lower division who are struggling themselves without a manager themselves. You know, we all know the complexities of going up against lower league sides in the cup. We've got the scars from 10 years ago about going up against lower ranked teams. So I don't see any complacency creeping in that respect. So the process will take as long as it needs to. My gut feeling is that if everything goes to plan, I presume that they'll want an announcement back end of the week, Thursday, maybe at the earliest Friday, have the new man down at Home Park on Saturday and ready to go to work on Monday. But as I say, I'm merely speculating. Nobody knows what's going on. Many people will claim to be in the know. And if they are in the know, good luck to them. If they're not and they're just claiming to be, then fair play, whatever floats your boat. But I trust Simon and the board. It will have been a thorough process. And you've got to remember, there's over 100 CVs to sift through as well. You know, that's a time-consuming thing. And the important thing to remember is up until today, Neil Jusnip has been firmly focused on the training ground, bar days that they've been travelling or Christmas Day. So today is really the first day he's probably had designated to the search of a manager, along with Andrew. Obviously, Simon's in the country as well, which is a massive boost to the search. So we can only presume that interviews have taken place today, yesterday, whenever. Might not even start till tomorrow, who knows? But whatever the outcome is, they'll have my full support, because I trust Simon and the board. Why wouldn't we? Every decision they've made so far has been pretty spot on. So trust the process. It doesn't matter how long it takes, because whoever they get in will have our full support, and I'm sure it will be the right decision.
Yeah, Ben, Joe touched on it there. Obviously, Ryan Lowe took us up from League Two. Steven Schumacher obviously won League One. Who's your front runner to take us up to the Premier League?
My front runner, who do I think is likely, or what would I look like to,
well,
who would
both.
I like to see?
Why not answer both of them?
Well, I might as well throw darts to guess who is most likely, because we don't know. Who, you know, if I was to have a list of who'd applied, then, you know, maybe I'd have a stab. But you know,
there is a blog, a 5-part blog post on a known Argyle fan site listing 100 different names, but whether it will be one of those is yet to be seen. But
yeah, I mean, there seems to be you know, weight behind the whole Dick Schroeder suggestion that, you know, he's been bandied around as a sort of like a low floor, high ceiling candidate, and also appeared on these ITK lists, you know, however much value they have. That's the sort of signing I'd like us to go for. I mean, putting aside the wages that established championship managers command, you know, there's a lot of people asking for managers or getting behind the idea of managers who we see as, who are seen as established championship managers, who do a job, who keep a team in the championship. But I think a lot of fans forget that we don't necessarily have a championship level squad in entirety. You're asking, you know, the sort of people who keep teams in the championship are guys who take over teams that have championship level budgets, championship level wage bills, etc., and they're not necessarily going to be able to replicate that with Argyle. So it's not the sure thing I think people are thinking it will be. And the other thing about those managers as well, so, you know, the established championship management names, is that's their ceiling. They've demonstrated their ceiling. If they were Premier League, you know, if their ceiling was Premier League level or top league level in, you know, Europe, then they'd be getting interviews for those jobs, not the sort of safe hands jobs in the Championship. So I think for Argyle, not only would it be, you know, the idea that would be a safe pair of hands to tidy us over for, you know, the next sort of few years, don't think that actually makes sense, you know, when you examine the logic of it. And I think that, you know, Argyle have demonstrated, you know, Simon Hallett didn't make all his money by, you know, he made that sort of money in risk assessment and making calculated risks. And I think that his approach to football is much the same. He's never reckless, but I think he will potentially look at candidates who are potentially low floor, maybe haven't necessarily proved anything in the immediate past, but have all the qualities and the potential to have a very high ceiling. And I think that, as Joe's alluded to, sort of other clubs who have tried to follow similar method or have sort of blazed the trail with similar methodology to that which Simon Hallett has expressed is behind his 5-year plan and his the ethos of his running of the club. Very much seem to sort of recruit in the same manner, which is to do a thorough job examining someone's personality and examining their credentials, and their methodology in terms of their approach to the game, their approach to a club's infrastructure, and then appointing on that basis. So I think that the best bet for the club would be to find someone in that mould. And it won't always, you know, it is a risk, of course, you know, to take on someone who maybe hasn't managed in this country or hasn't managed at this level, depending on where the target's coming from, maybe the lower leagues of the EFL or other leagues abroad. But I think the club will probably be looking at finding someone with a potentially high ceiling, much like they did with Lowe and then and Schumacher, to take someone who's got the potential rather than the track record. I think that would be the smartest thing. Yeah, but again, like I say, I'm a layman. That's my sort of view. But I think the idea of getting behind a sort of some of the more established championship names isn't necessarily going to get the result that you know that fans might be expecting from those who normally perform their magic or get their results with a different kind of setup. Certainly maybe some of the older heads are used to having a bit more of a hand in matters that the club are trying to keep you know, a division of powers among the infrastructure at the club. So, yeah, I think that that's, you know, the club's very forward thinking, and that would be their approach. Again, you know, that's purely my observations of the way they've operated up till now, assuming they'll continue following that philosophy.
Yeah, Nick, I think Joe and Ben have been quite clever and articulate in basically just naming anyone. Is there anyone that you see as
hang on a minute, I didn't name anyone.
That's what I'm saying. You're quite clever in not naming anyone. Nick, is there anybody that you would like to see?
Personally, I'll stick my neck on the chopper. I don't mind. Personally, I would like to see Nathan Jones, personally, because I think he's done it before with a club of a similar sort of size to us with a small budget. From my point of view, I think he could probably handle it quite well. And I think he could do a decent job for us.
I think it would be nice to have a manager that we know that would be off the second he got a better opportunity too. Like, there would be no speculation. No. Somebody would come in and we would tell.
Okay, yeah. Another name that was chucked out, which I think would fall into that same category, was obviously Scott Parker. And Scott Parker, I think, is a manager that's been out of work for a little while, I believe. He went across over to the continent. He went across to Belgium and struggled a little bit. And I think he needs to rebuild his career. So taking a club like Plymouth or Argyle, as we all love to call it, going forward to rebuild his career as a stepping stone, I think would probably be a good opportunity for him. But again, it's like you said, like Joe said, I trust the club to make the right decision. I trust Simon, I trust Andrew, I trust Neil. They will put the club's interest at heart and they will make the correct decision. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. If the club came out and said, you know, we've appointed the most bang average of bang average championship managers, I wouldn't assume that's a bad appointment. I'd assume they'd done their due diligence and there's a very good reason why they'd chosen that manager. And, you know, and I have every confidence that, you know, despite what it might appear from the outside, that, you know, that there's strategy and good logic behind the decision, and that there's every reason for it to be a success. I think no matter who the club appoints, no matter what their past history is or past success, doesn't have much bearing on how they will perform with Argyle. And I've got every confidence that whoever the club picks, whether it's someone who, you know, I would never have chosen as a fan, I've got every confidence that they've done it. You know, that it has every opportunity to be a success. And that's so brilliant about being in this situation with the club being run so well at the minute, is that, you know, we get told there's not money for transfers. No one panics and complains because they know the club's being run well. And people say, you know, the club says we're going to appoint whoever it is. We're not necessarily all going to weep and wail because we know the club does its job very well. You'll always have the outliers who will cry about it, but I think that there's, you know, anybody that gets appointed will have been done so with a great, you know, judiciousness, if that's a word, and will have every opportunity
to, of course, succeed. I mean, the other way you've got to look at it as well is, who'd heard of Derek Adams before he came to Home Park? Who'd heard of Paul Stoke before he came to Home Park? And not many of these people were known before they came to Argyle. The club had done their due diligence. It was a different regime at the time, but this club would still have done due diligence. They'd have done a lot of research into these managers and brought them in, and they've been successful. So with the current board and the current board of directors in management that we've got in place, I genuinely believe that we're in a very good situation where they will appoint the right person. I've got no doubt.
Nick, you've just given off Sturrock and Adams and things. I think we've got a pretty obvious example of this regime making a big decision. Out of all of us, be honest, who would have given the job to Stephen Schumacher 2 years ago?
Exactly my point. Yeah.
And they got that spot on. Nobody can deny that they got it spot on. So I've every faith. Look, let's just let it run its course. However long it takes, and they'll have everyone's full support, whoever it is.
I like to say that, like, I'm sort of fully supportive of whoever the board is going to appoint. Like, you know, like we said, they've earned the right to be trusted, and as fans, we should back them in that decision. However, and once again, I want to say all of these accounts that are claimed to be in the know have to be taken with a massive pinch of salt. However, if there is any truth to John Terry, I really wouldn't like to see that happen for a number of reasons. And that is the one appointment that I would turn my nose up at. But yeah, so I'd just like to say that.
Yeah, I think unless anybody else has got anything to add on tonight's space, I think it's maybe run its course. Joe, you normally have a few things to add. Is there anything you want to finish on?
What are you trying to say? That I always want to get the last word in? I've nothing else to add, Aaron. You're the host.
No, good then. Let's call that a night then. If you missed any part of this, it will be live on all your major podcast platforms from when you wake up early in the morning. Well, unless you wake up late in the morning, then it'll still be live. Make sure you follow us on all social medias. I can't remember what they all are, but we're on most of them. Go and find us there. And I think we'll call that a night. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.